whereas having this Saul Ortiz, for example, you know, and there's a lot of, I think, synergy we could create amongst our the peoples and nations, and but also different organizations coming from different areas. We need to have this same language regarding the planet Earth, Mother Earth. Like one of those presentations just mentioned, Mother Earth is sick. Mother Earth is in need of a cure. But we can do only so much with one community, one organization. We need to have a large or a larger audience or people that will be involved in some ways, in their own ways, because not everyone can, you know, we can only do so much for ourselves. But, you know, if we start looking at each other and see what, you know, what we can do, you know, sharing the information, educating people, educating the language, for example, strategies that within communication. We need to also to talk to younger generation to educate them, because they're the ones who's going to have probably more impact than us today. They'll be the ones who've been living with the long-term effects in their lives. And, you know, earth and water can endure only so much. So life is water. Life is water. We only can say that so many times, but we need to say it again and again. If we don't have clean water, safe water to drink, no one will survive. Doesn't matter where we live. If we don't have water, it's going to be very, very hard for every living thing. So for me, it's not just about hydro dams. It's about water also. Simply because if we don't have, you know, those, you know, elements, air, water, earth, they're all bound together. This is a sacred relation that we as First Nation have with Mother Earth and water in all living things. So for us as First Nation peoples, Canada or U.S., I think that we have some of those solutions that we can bring up and share, but we only can do so much on our side. We need your voices. We need your help. Mother Earth needs your help.
Yeah.
I'll stop at this this time just to let you know where I'm from. My community's name is Black Snow. It's a French name. But then in my language, it's called Shishipsagigan, meaning duck lake in English, I'd say. And I'm one of 11 communities of Anishinaabe communities. And well, I'm from the northeast of Canada, in Quebec, the Quebec region. We're about 12,000 Anishinaabe people under different with those different communities. We have people living outside our communities, but we still use the land. We still go to the land. We still, you know, use in a way that, you know, respectful all living things in the waters and the land. So we still have very close links to the land.
First, I wanted to ask you, what are the strategies that you're developing in your communities to resist these false solutions on the basis of the long trajectory of Indigenous resistance? So what are the strategies? What are the ways of Indigenous resistance? And also, what are the alternatives that are embodied by your communities? What are the real solutions that are put forward by Indigenous peoples from hundreds and even thousands of years of life ways into the past? Perhaps, Candy, would you like to get us started with those questions? Thank you.
Yes, that would be great. I started out talking about a very personal story of my community, and now I want to share, like you said, what work we've been doing. So you all may have heard of the Dakota Access Pipeline. When we went to Standing Rock in 2016, that pipeline is coming from my community in the Bakken, where I just shared that information about oil development, and that pipeline was going through, is going through Standing Rock. You remember the dams I showed you in the beginning, cutting right across their dam, the Owyhee Dam, which they were also forced to get their drinking water from. So standing in solidarity with other Native communities like the Oteti Shakoni. But we all know how that ended. Because we stood up and said, Mini Wachoni, water is life, water of life. Because we wanted to fight back against colonizers and colonial systems, we were forcibly removed by our own military in the United States. And this is not uncommon. This happens in other countries, as I'll get into in a little bit here. This next slide is going to be a little bit upsetting. If you have any children watching, maybe you'll have them look away, because I want to show you what they do to us here in the United States by shooting at us, using us for target practice. The nights, I'm getting really emotional. Today is October 27th. It is the anniversary of one of the days that we were attacked by our own military. And then in November again, over 500 people came into our medics. They were all shot either in the face, in the groin, or near their spine, intentionally by military forces who said that they were using less than lethal weapons. But I also want to recognize my own privilege being here in the United States, because these things are happening around the world. Yes, we stand up against our political forces and our police forces here in the US in the belly of the beast. I stand up against them as a Native American person because we want to defend the sacred, that what we were just talking about, the sacredness of our air, our land, and our water. And yes, we have not yet shut down the Dakota Access Pipeline. We were forcibly removed, and oil is flowing through that pipeline, which incidentally has already had at least 3 leaks that we know of, probably a lot more that they tried to cover up. But internationally, this was brought up. What's the bigger picture besides one pipeline? So as the Indigenous Environmental Network, we work against this false solutions of carbon markets and carbon trading. This idea of reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, which is pushed within the United Nations. Some of our early work was saying, actually, this is reaping profits from evictions, land grabs, deforestation, and destruction of biodiversity. That's what red projects are. Well, going into this COP now, they're just talking about, they've changed the language to be very dangerous language around net zero and pushing for things within Article 6 and talking about how they're going to decrease the emissions in the sky, the carbon dioxide emissions. They don't ever talk about keeping it in the ground. That's not on the agenda at COP26. Fossil fuels, mining, uranium industry, these things are not on their agenda. And this is the 26th conference of the parties. And while all of that is happening, these REDS projects, the Amazon rainforest is being destroyed as a result of what they call solutions. This picture shows their solution, because what they do is they say, oh, it's okay for us to destroy the lungs of the earth, which is the Amazon rainforest. We can clear cut that. And I know that they say that because I meet my friends in these spaces, the United Nations spaces. My friends tell me this is what is happening in our communities, Candy. This is what they're doing to us. They're coming in and they're displacing us and telling us how we're going to operate and how we're going to run.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. We're going to take a short station break. When we return, we will continue with Hoodwinked in the Hot House Part 2, Frontline Voices of Indigenous Resistance Beyond Climate False Solutions. We'll be right back.
Gloria here is actually on a list of a person who is in danger because of speaking out against injustices in her community around oil and around the industry. She's in the Global South, and she's still standing up fighting. And I take so much pride and respect in knowing these women and these fighters and these warriors, because even though I have what I showed you happening here in the belly of the beast in the United States, I have a certain privilege just by being here. And we have to lift up our brothers and sisters in the Global South, many of whom can't even go to these United Nations conferences, especially this year, from being shut out, which is great for the government because they'll try to sneak in anything that they can to continue using carbon trading and carbon offsets as their solution, which is a false solution. And my brothers and sisters in Australia, we've worked with them. I've reached out and I've worked with the Seed Youth Mob in Australia, and I've gone there because they were told that fracking in the Northern Territories wasn't going to upset anything, that all it was going to be a hole in the ground the size of a billy can, and that they didn't have to worry about fracking. So I went to them and I told them my struggle and my story, and they were like, what? The companies lied to us? Yes, because even if you have free, prior, and informed consent, that doesn't include necessarily the actual reality of what it's going to look like, what these details mean. The devil is in the details. So they'll lie to communities about REDS projects. They'll lie to communities about fracking coal, uranium, and other mining, but then get some person, maybe one or two people on a tribal council or in a leadership position to sign up, and therefore they consider it cleared. And so we continue to meet with our aunties in other countries, like my aunties here that I met in Australia, fighting to protect country. Meeting with our relatives when I was in Bonn, Germany, who were again fighting a coal plant, a coal, huge mining operation, where they were just clear cutting and destroying and mining and strip mining and destroying lands. So meeting with people and understanding the struggle globally from a local perspective to an international perspective, and becoming a sky protector as a result of knowing the truth. There is so much power in the truth, and we can all get behind understanding the truth by joining our organizations and doing a little bit of research and going out on the front lines and speaking back about what's happening in our own communities locally, but then also expanding that to work with international organizations like WECAN, Women's Earth Climate Action Network, doing really good work lifting up women in their stories. Or organizations like MADRE, who is amazing, connecting women internationally and bringing us all together to share our stories and our struggles, so that we can work collectively. We do things at home, like the water blessing and healing walks that we haven't been able to have because of COVID, but we've had prayer circles virtually. We've gone to DC several times, Washington DC, to say, this is not what we want in our communities. Listen to us as Indigenous peoples. Listen to the stories that we have about how to tackle and combat the climate crisis. We set up teepees on the lawn and make ourselves known, because we're always facing invisibility here in the United States. Our populations were so decimated by colonization that we now only make up 2% of the population in the United States. So we have decided to do a just transition program and curriculum. This is at the Haskell Nations Indian University in Lawrence, Kansas, where we are implementing a just transition program right within our schooling. And we are reaching out to higher institutions to do this as well. We are reaching out to elementary schools to stop brainwashing our kids like I was, and to teach our kids what it means to have a transition. And there is no one size fits all. That's what the U.S. tries to do and what the United Nations tries to do, is one size fits all is going to save us, and that does not work. We have to do small scale, local, distributed actions and education forums. We are building earth lodges in our community again, remembering our culture, bringing back our culture, how we used to live. Sure, this one has a cement floor because it's a modern version that we can use for cultural programming, for teaching our language that, yes, is unfortunately being lost. And it's been a struggle to learn because of the boarding school eras and how our grandparents were beat if they spoke their language, by a U.S. government system that actually has a termination era where they tried to kill us, but we survived. Our grandmothers survived. And we're still here fighting, trying to find ways for energy to work for us. So small scale distributed systems of power, like Lakota Solar Enterprises. Henry Red Cloud once told me he knows how to build a solar panel using bone and ash and the sun and a blower in order to create power and energy. And it's not energy of what we're wasting right now. It's not energy to power like cities. This is at Standing Rock, where the pipeline, this runs right by where the pipeline runs. So there's a solar array there now. But we need small scale. We need to uplift our communities like Native Renewables. Because these large-scale corporate schemes in wind and solar, you heard, they're digging out the precious minerals in South America once again to have these giant corporations and to continue to make money about it. That's not what it's about. It's about each home having its own mode of being able to live in a way that is not just surviving, but also thriving, but not off the backs of other people. And let's talk about our food systems, because if we can't even feed ourselves, we're not truly sovereign nations. We need to be able to either have small scale gardens or large scale gardens and remember how to grow our own food. If our soil is contaminated, we can't do that. Our indigenous principles of just transition show these booklets that we have. We can go on ienearth.org and you can actually look into the booklet yourself and make it make sense for your community. This is one of the projects that we're working on as the Indigenous Environmental Network to show what a just transition might look like in our communities. We are having basket making sessions in our communities where my husband was able to help organize a 3-day workshop to relearn our culture and use our own baskets instead of plastics, for example, in our community, because this is what we used to do, Ma'atetugu, a long time ago. And this is what makes sense for us. We are able to bring community members together to relearn our culture, to laugh and to tell stories, to grow small scale community gardens, which are able to produce enough crops. Our communities are small so that we can roast and dry enough corn to give every elder in our community this year one bag of corn and beans. So every elder was able to grow, to make their own corn soup, one of our traditional foods. And we want, and we're gonna grow that project. That's part of our just transition work. It is for the next 7 generations. If we don't speak for them, who will? These suits at the conference in the United Nations? No. Our kids are sacred. Our kids are precious. Just like all of the four-legged and the winged and those that swim in the waters, they need us to be the voice for them. If we don't speak for them, who will? That's the work that we do at the Indigenous Environmental Network with our allies as a whole, the It Takes Roots Coalition, who now has our hoodwinked in the hothouse pamphlet that you guys saw and you can get online, to talk about all of the false solutions and to call them out. And we're doing it because it's common sense, because we collectively as humanity need to save ourselves. Matikinads, everybody. I'll stop there. Thank you.
A humble thank you, Candy. Leona, would you like to share the ways in which your communities and organizations are resisting and how they embody actual real solutions?
I can try. I'm not sure about. You know, we're working on real solutions, and I'm going to share my screen again and elaborate on one of the slides I skipped over. This is actually not my personal story, but this is some of the work I'm engaged in right now, is this this issue of abandoned uranium mines. So earlier I mentioned there's 15,000 in the country with no law to clean them up. So basically anybody right now, I would ask people in the U.S. who are feeling okay to call your Congress representative or senator. I put a link in the chat about RECA, which is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, but you can talk to your elected officials. I encourage everyone to call them and tell any elected official that you are close to or not even close to, just any story today. A lot of them are on the federal level, they're on the national level, and any number of them, you can call your representatives and just tell them, I'm really concerned about what Candy talked about. I'm really concerned about dams or uranium or nuclear, because we really need people to call those folks in Congress. And so the stories, the two things I'm gonna share, you can contact me. I got one of my colleagues, Jesse Dierenwater, manning the chat or watching the chat. Excuse my language, I don't want to be heteropatriarchal, but anyway, so this is a map that I wanted to highlight this specific community. So I'm going to share a couple slides. It shouldn't take too long. This is the site of the world's largest uranium spill. So this is close to Gallup, New Mexico, which is a border town of the Navajo Nation and New Mexico. And it's in a place called Church Rock. Well, technically it's north of Church Rock. This is in a place called Redwater Pond Road Community. So right here, I know it's hard to see, but there's some little white, you can see some structures here. These white squares represent houses. So this is a community that lives there still today. Some of them were moved out. They were bought out by the EPA to move them out of here. Again, divide and conquer. So there's a uranium mine here. And then there's two mines on this other side, one mine here and another one off the picture. But the community literally lives between two uranium mines. And then just down the road, a uranium mill site. So just to fast forward, this company, United Nuclear Corporation, it's now owned by General Electric. They were mining here, and then they were processing here, and their waste was stored right here. In 1979, in the morning of July 16th, which is the same day as the first atomic test, which is really weird because it was at the same time in the same day, 5:30 in the morning, July 16th, the waste was being held with the dam that broke. So all of that radioactive waste, it got into the environment, and then through this little ditch here, it reached a river that transported over 90 million gallons of waste over 100 miles into Arizona. It's never been cleaned up, never been studied. So fast forward to today, General Electric is, they have to clean up the site. So they're proposing to move the mine waste from here, a million cubic yards. They want to pile it on top of where this old waste was. And the community's like, hey, there was a big flood, a big spill a few years ago. This is all a floodplain. What happens with climate change? And if there's another big flood, you're setting up a second big accident. So just to show you a couple pictures of the community, they're very active. They bring attention to this issue every year. And sometimes elected officials show up. Not a lot has been done. Just this week, the Navajo Nation is calling on a congressional hearing about this and what people can do. So again, the cleanup would be from moving the mine waste from here on top of this other waste pile here. And the options are, do you want us to make a conveyor belt or do you want us to truck it? There's no option of not doing this and having a different plan. The cherry on top of this kind of horrible situation is that the more radioactive waste, they'll move to an indigenous community in Utah, which is the plan right now. And Paul No is an organization I work with. We're trying to stop this. So you can go to our website for how to send comments and all of that. But just going back to the other waste issue, Jesse Dierenwater is someone who lives near a nuclear, sorry about that, in Detroit. So you can go to his website, nfermi.now.org. We're fighting this nuclear issue on the uranium end and the nuclear power plant end, and we're inviting other Indigenous communities anywhere in the middle impacted by uranium or nuclear to join us. For example, with this proposal for the waste dumps here in Southeast New Mexico and Texas, the transport would be by rail. So nationally, everybody is kind of at risk if you live near a railroad. So this BNSF railroad goes by two of our sacred mountains. As Diné people, I'm really concerned if there was an accident that might permanently contaminate our sacred mountains. And of course, our water and our health and all of that. But this is one of the reasons I'm really concerned. So I'm just inviting people to join us. You can email us at nnuclearcolonialism@gmail.com.
This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. Remember to visit our website, sotrueradio.org, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at @SoTrueRadio. And this is your host, Margaret Prescott. And y'all, please remember to stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:58 a.m. Next up is Fight the Empire. Well, good morning. It's 9 a.m., and it's time to fight the empire. I'm the host, Per Fogring, and it's on your radio station, KBOO. So, big item in the news today is that this just came in. Apparently, a Taiwanese news channel